Suicide is preventable. Most suicidal individuals desperately want to live, they're just unable to see alternatives to their problems. If you're struggling or are worried about a loved one, please reach out. In the United States, you can call 1-800-273-TALK. Or you can visit IASP.info for suicide prevention hotlines around the globe. Somebody will be there for you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You are never alone, no matter how dark or lonely things may seem. Call 1-800-273-TALK or visit IASP.info. That's 1-800-273-TALK or IASP.info.
For some, this is painfully obvious, but hardcore gaming means it ain't for the novices. The main source to brain train your knowledge, and lay maintain with a course aimed at colleges. To HG 101, we give the honor. Thanks to Kirk, a lot of Xerxes to host it proper, as well as Satanga, Cal and Bobinator, Booker Hart and others discuss and discover all the 47,000 games. And when they rate them, you can bet it's scientifically locked in position. Speaking of which, no system is obscure. And look, they wrote a book about it. Go out and cop yours.
Hello and welcome to HardcoreGaming101.net's Top 47,858 Games of All Time podcast, where we objectively, definitively, and scientifically rank the games that you nominate. My name is Xerxes, and I'm the show's main host and producer, and on this podcast we have three rules. Rule 1, all rankings are final, official, and scientifically accurate. Rule 2, you can nominate one game at a time via 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher. Those are the ones we try to get to first. You can also go to bit.ly/rankthisplease. And add a game to the slush pile and cross your fingers. We make no guarantees on those. Rule number 3, you can nominate games that have already been nominated, just don't nominate games you've already ranked. See the master list for yourself. It's at bit.ly/47kgames. That's bit.ly/47kgames.
I'm going to take a bath. Nothing's going to stop me.
All right, and we are here with another great Top Games episode where we find a game you like and then we are really mean to it for seemingly no reason. That's right. We're going to go after your nostalgia today. It's Golden Sun. It's a Game Boy Advance game by Camelot, who I am informed actually was kind of like the people that made Shining Force. I never knew that, but...
More importantly, like, they made Beyond the Beyond and Mario RPG Golf.
Also known as Sonic Software Planning.
Excuse me, Mario RPG Tennis, even though it wasn't called RPG. It was just Mario Tennis on the Game Boy, but it was an RPG.
Yeah, well, they did regular Mario Tennis as well, right? Didn't they do...
Yeah, and these days, I think they're still just doing Mario Tennis and Golf, so...
Yeah,
they've
Golf, Tennis,
They found their niche.
Yeah, I think they're pretty good at it. That or Nintendo just kind of ate them entirely, because that's who published this. It was a Game Boy Advance launch title, which means it was 2001, August 1st, in, I believe, Japan, in that case. And this game was nominated to us by Thrum Program on iTunes. I guess they left us a very nice review and left us a less than nice game, so thank you. Unsure how to...
They heal with one hand and harm with the other. The three-run program, it brings you closer to God in the most uncomfortable way.
Three-run program, you know, I don't dislike ROM. There's a lot of ROMs, and some of them are pretty good. But I'm also not sure if it's Thrum Program or, like, it's the number three, and then the word ROM, then program, so...
As opposed
I don't
to
know. I don't know, they can give us another 5-star review telling us about how to say their name.
Like, yeah, they can hit us up on Stitcher or... I don't know, there's probably other...
47,000 Top 47,000 usernames.
I actually really like about
number one 80. Is Uranium Anchor.
I can't believe that we're not giving any. Sorry, I can always remember our favorite Bonus Lizard. Shout out to Bonus Lizard. But that was not their name. Is not the Oh goodness, there was some horrible name that was amazing. Go listen through all of our recordings and find it and tell us because we're doing Golden Sun.
Are we sure it's not Emoto Lover Call?
What? That's from a different iteration of the show that doesn't exist.
By the way, that's Call. I'm Word on the Wind, and Clade's over there somewhere.
Yo.
I'm waiting for him. Is he...
Hi, I'm here. I'm Clay.
He is here. Okay, that's good. I would hate for anyone to get out of
Clay. Great and quiet Clay.
So this one is, it's a JRPG on the Game Boy Advance. It's a, not really even a full game, because it just kind of ends, which is great.
This is definitely a game that a lot of people have really strong nostalgia for, and to be frank, nostalgia is pretty much all this game has going for it.
It's got good music. I like the music.
The music is all right. It's got some tunes that are worth listening to, and the visual style is kind of the thing that brings it distinction, because prior to this, a handheld, you know, RPG was going to equate to 8-bit-ish graphics, like you would see from, you know, Dragon Quest back in the day on, like, the NES or, you know, that kind of thing.
Have any JRPGs? I assume it had one. I know it had a Phantasy Star game.
It had two Shining Forces.
I'm going to assume it did, but I could not name any of them off the top of my head. That's a Kurt question.
So the Shining Forces. Yeah, like, but those are SRPGs, technically, aren't they? Or turbages?
It also had Golden Axe Battle.
Yeah, I love the Golden Axe spinoffs. They are so weird. Just like Golden Axe, the axe. Golden Axe, the shield. Golden Axe, the death adder. Just
death equals adder. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Well, and Golden Sun was, yeah, like, this was the first mocked upgrade from the Game Boy tech, you know, that was the dominant handheld for over a decade. And this was, you know, the Game Boy Advance was Nintendo finally being dragged into the 90s.
in the year 2001.
That's right. Very important that they finally, and then obviously everyone went and bought it, because they're like, oh my goodness, you can have color in a handheld? That's literally unbelievable. Why has no one done this before?
They'd already done that. They had the Game Boy Color. It was in the name.
I don't count that as a color. It's got like six. I'm not obsessed with it. You know, if I called something like color, and it's like, yeah, the color is black and white. Like, you know, it's not really color.
Okay, Captain Cabbage Green.
Yeah. That, right? So, Golden Sun, takes full advantage of the Game Boy Advance, which is probably its biggest calling card. Is it looks great. As we said, it does have a very strong, it looks pre-rendered, but I don't know.
It's one of those things where they have like CG models and they take snapshots of them at given angles so that you have sprites that look like CG models without, you know, actually actively rendering a model, which would drag a system to a crawl.
And they're really, like, they're quite nicely done. You know, sometimes, you know, the pre-rendered stuff looks very, well, 90s PC games. Like, it's kind of really muddy. It's really difficult to discern what it is.
It has some scaling problems at points.
What, you talking about the battles in this game?
Just in general, really. The battles are one of the better-looking parts of the game overall, because, like, they do actually have multiple angles for the various sprites, and the camera likes to swing around a lot.
Is that
kind of arbitrarily.
I think
that might be a Shining Force thing. Shining Force was never really my thing. Clay, is that a Shining Force thing?
No.
Okay.
Because I thought
that's
the Shining Force games...
that's what JRPGs did.
Okay, I'm gonna disagree. No. Phantasy Star 2 does not have a camera that pans all around the battle.
Well, by 2001,
yeah, like
PlayStation.
What I mean is,
really fun.
The
whoosh.
Shining Force games have some multiple angles of their like sprite characters that they swapped between in like fights and things. Like they're very cool looking characters. They had a lot of movement and shape.
I don't even think they do that in 3.
I don't, they, one they don't and two, spin the camera. The you don't angles. Spin the camera on the Mega Drive. That's insane. Don't do that.
What's the one on the Saturn? Do they do it in that?
I don't think they do it in 3, no. I can't remember them swinging the camera around. Wait, maybe.
I know they swing the camera
it's
around
long
in
enough, 3.
Our favorite Dark Savior. That's
yeah. I've got a few barf bags I could tell you about that one. But
pretty good.
Shining in the Holy Ark and Beyond the Beyond did it too for critical hits.
Really? I didn't know that part.
Yep.
This game does have critical hits.
Shining in the Holy Ark is one I'm trying to remember the name of, yeah.
They increasingly made their game, like, impossible to follow. Like, just, we're just gonna stop calling it things that people want to buy. I would never buy a game called Shining in the Holy Ark. Golden Sun's an okay name. So,
Golden Gun is actually a pretty alright name, but it's not the kind of thing that I would expect to be attached to a game like this. Like, Golden Sun, like, that makes me think of, like a farm sim on a tropical island.
Well, you do live in a quaint town in this game, and nothing will ever go wrong.
Except when they do, but it doesn't actually matter, because no one actually gets hurt, despite claims to the contrary, but it just continually retcons itself until no one was ever actually hurt in this whole event. That so, yeah, was set this... forth by a pair of bad guys who are actually the good guys who don't know what they're doing, except they do know what they're doing, but they don't know what they're doing, and take hostages to ensure that they will have your cooperation when the time comes in order for you to deliver a MacGuffin that they could have taken, but lazily didn't take.
Because they are far stronger than you.
And when it comes to the point that, oh, hey, this, like, hostage exchange could actually happen. You have a moment where you can actually hand over the MacGuffin to them in exchange for the safe return of the people that you care about, you know, one of which you thought was dead. No, they don't give a damn about that. They're just, like, on the way out, and they just, like, just want to kill you. They don't even verify if you have the thing with you. They don't care. They're not doing that in response or retaliation. They're just like, no, you're a fool. You showed up here. We're going to kill you. It's like, what?
That is a trick. It was all a trick.
No, I can't say it's a trick because damn near every named character in this game has a mission statement that they contradict with activities that are directly opposing to what would allow them to achieve that goal.
I mean, that's... Like, that's
it's a chronic thing. Here.
Yeah, that's the weird thing about Golden Sun and why you can, I would say, enjoy it on your first run if you're... You know, if you this is your kind of thing, you can enjoy it. But then you'll get the inkling as you remember what happened. You'll be like, wait a second. Hold on.
None of this makes any sense.
Yeah, like, it's like individual segments are like, we have to do this to do this. And your brain will be like, yep, okay, that checks out. Those two things make sense. And then it'll make you do something else. And you'll be like, okay, well, that makes sense. But when you look at the trail that this game leads, it's like, what the hell happened here?
I don't even know if I could attribute to that. Like, while I was thinking over the structure of this game, and I was like, I've spent the last almost 9 hours since I woke up refreshing my memory on this game. And so I've made it clear that I don't like Chrono Trigger. I'm going to use Chrono Trigger as my example here of all the stuff that it does right that this gets wrong. Because while I don't like Chrono Trigger, I'm not going to say it isn't a good game. It does a lot of things correct, you know, from a structural perspective.
Well, before we run off to just do the comparison, just real quick, because I know it won't take long, can we just mention the setting or what the game actually, like, what are we talking about here? It's a group of characters, they go on a little
mission.
All right,
fair enough. Yeah. All right, so the structure it sets you up with are four color, magically color-coded dweebs using a system that attempts to plagiarize on the Sailor Moon theme of elemental harmony, where you have Jupiter, Mars, Venus, and Mercury, but they fucked up and Venus does not represent Earth in Sailor Moon, but it does here, even though we actually have an Earth, so I don't know, their theming doesn't work on a Roman classical level or an anime level, so I don't really know what they were trying to do there.
Good question.
None of the characters have any particularly points of distinction about their personality. They're just all just sort of like, I'm the silent protagonist. I am.
He can the thick nod one. Though. He nods a lot.
You know, you can make him nod or shake his head, and the dialogue does not adequately reflect these.
The dialogue he has left for like a single second, and then comes straight back. It's just whoa, like a rubber band.
It really does not work.
I like
it doesn't even drift into but thou must territory. It just fucking ignores you.
Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes they do like a line. They're like, what? No.
When I say ignores you, I mean like it ignores your agency. It's just like, no, I'm not going to go along with this plot. And it's like, and then it just and then respond. You get like two things. Either, God damn it, you're going along with this. And then everyone proceeds as if you had said yes. Or you just skip straight to everyone proceeds as if you said yes. There's one point where there's like a ship captain who's like, I don't know your name. Do you mind telling me your name? No. Oh, well then, you look like an Isaac, so I'm going to call you Isaac. And Isaac is the name of like the player character of this game. So it's just like, well, what was the point of that?
You can rename yourself though, right? I think you can.
Maybe, I think
I ignored the text prompt. Yeah.
You can,
You can call yourself something other. There's no point.
You
can really
put in a code. You can...
Oh, that's right, you have to put in a code to do it, because...
No, hold on. You can do it naturally, but all the Shining Force games let you have a code where you can rename everybody in the party. Even...
Yeah, I did not know that. I did not know that that was a Camelot standard.
That's pretty good. There's no reason to, because as you said, it's not a...
I mean, it might make the script a little funnier, and it could definitely do so, because the script for this game is over 70,000 words long. For comparison, Metal Gear Solid 1 is in, the 35,000 range, and Metal Gear Solid 2 is in the 45,000 word range.
Those are spoken word games, though. Do you happen to have the, a different RPG, just to give anyone a
I can tell you that the script... As of the completion of the intro prologue, the dungeon and prologue, by the time you hit world map, is over 7,500 words long, which is longer than Edgar Allan Poe's The Purloined Letter.
I'm going to have to give a shout out to our listeners. If any of them have read that, I don't know for sure. It's not in the school syllabus as far as I know, so I don't think they would have.
Point is this game is immensely wordy, all displayed over three lines of text at once, and you go through 5 minutes of paragraph upon paragraph to what could be summarized in about five sentences, because people constantly flip-flop of wanting to say things, not wanting to say things, saying one thing, saying something that contradicts it, and then affirming that one or the other of the previous statements was accurate.
It's also, there are a few NPCs you can talk to, since it does the standard towns and stuff, and they're not interesting. And there's plenty of them to deliver dialogue.
They don't even contribute to world building in any really meaningful way. One of the biggest sins of this game is you have all of these systems and things that on their face should be really cool and interesting. It's the main character has, telekinesis. He can
everyone gets telekinesis. It's freaking telekinesis town out here.
Yeah, particularly Isaac and Garrett to a lesser degree get telekinesis.
From
and it's like
thief?
All right.
From Thief?
No, Garrett's the fire guy.
Oh, okay.
Because, the party is Isaac, Garrett, Ivan, and Mia. And the only one that even attempts to get any kind of actual, backstory or character building is Ivan, and it basically just makes it clear that this kid cannot survive on his own. And not in a particularly interesting way. His backstory involves, oh, hey, I was hanging around with this merchant guy who has this ancient artifact that he was given to him by other wind mages that was supposed to be given to me as part of a prophecy that they told him in exchange for saving his life. Instead of giving it to me, he lost it while we were on a caravan trip and left me behind in the middle of the road and told me not to come back until I found it. Then he went off and got himself, and then he went off and decided that it was a good idea to just go chill in a town of thieves where the head thief is a corrupt and malign individual.
I mean, that's
a malignant individual.
All to be in character, that guy appears to be an idiot.
Yeah, here's the thing. None of that was, out of, desperation or anything. That's just kind of how it all played out with full knowledge of where they were going and what they were doing. So it's just, it wasn't even, something terrible happened and it's, he was forced to take refuge there. No, he just made that decision.
He's just an idiot.
Exactly, because everyone in this game is an idiot.
That's exactly how the game rolls out. A lot of the problems in this game could have been solved through doing anything differently in any way.
Yeah, even the core conceit. So I mentioned the MacGuffin being needed by the bad guys and whatnot, who are actually the good guys, but they're jerks, so they're bad guys. It's their goal is to light the lighthouses, to return alchemy to the world. And in the prologue of the game, they ransack the ancient shrine that, you let them into because, rather than alerting anyone to their plans or anything, you went along with this alchemic sage who flip-flops between knowing nothing about the elemental stars, as they're called, or knowing everything about the elemental stars within 5 minutes of one another, starting out with him not knowing anything, knowing everything, and then not knowing everything again. And they get three of the four of them.
whatever the plot needs, you know.
Yeah, whatever the plot needs, and not with any particular consistency. And so they get three of the four of them, and all four of them are needed to light all four of the lighthouses. And then the Wise One, which is like this ancient tentacle-less beholder, hangs behind and says that, you know, the lighthouses must not be lit or the world will be destroyed. This is all a lie, as the second game comes to show you. But either way, for the Wise One's goal of having all of the lighthouses not be lit, the best answer there is to not take the MacGuffin out of the cave and to leave it there while they go off and do their thing. Instead, he sends, you know, you, a pair of idiot teenagers out with the MacGuffin to assumably barter with the bad guys for their hostages, which they don't do.
I mean, that's usually in this kind of plot, the bad guys are collecting the MacGuffins and you try and stop them and fail. And that is the plot. You know, you fail and then
that'd be a far more interesting game.
but I think that, yeah, there's a little bit of a, it may have been some hamstringing in terms of the game's time frame. It was a launch title, so it's possible they kind of cut their game up a bit to make what I assume was a launch window period. And then they dump out an entire second game, which really does constitute pretty much the other half of this game. It doesn't, as I said much earlier, it ends, and it's kind of like to be continued.
It's like it ends on a boat ride. It's like, oh, I wonder what amazing adventures we're going to have next. Credits.
Yeah. And then the sequel game does indeed like flip.
If you need to either have a link cable or be willing to put in a 216 character length password to bring over your progress from the first game into it.
Well, you only had to do it once.
You only have to do it once, but it presents you like this password, you know, as just a sheet, yeah, and then another sheet, and another sheet. Six sheets with characters on them. And if you're not using an emulator with a screenshot function, good luck transcribing all of that.
Well, you know,
without a mistake.
The game doesn't have, you know, any auto map or anything, so this is just a little bit of extra fun for the player. So this game does have, the format-wise, it's got your wandering around towns and that sort of junk, and then there's a lot of dungeons.
Oh, and that's another problem with this game. You basically never go to any location because you need to go there. You go there because it's along the way, and then, like, any obstacles are there are not presented in any particularly satisfying manner. Like, so I was mentioning, like, the whole thing about Chrono Trigger. So it's like the Chrono Trigger progression goes, you know, it's okay, we got to stop Lavos. How do we stop Lavos? We stop Magus from summoning Lavos. To stop Magus, we have to get the Masamune. We have to get Frog because he can use it. We have to go back to the past to repower it. Yeah. And then, you know, we lose the gate key to Azala, so we got to go fight Azala to get the gate key back. And it's like, that's a progression that goes pretty far off of, you know, the mark of the original goal. But it still feels like we're on task doing what we need to do. If we deviate from what we're doing now, we're not going to succeed. We're going to fail. In Golden Sun, it's just like, oh, there's a bridge that's broken. Well, okay, let's just go dick around in this direction until nothing that has anything to do with the bridge gets resolved. Like, you would think that going straight to the lighthouses would be your priority. No, it isn't. The game actually gives way more time and attention to Ivan's whole thing about, like, his ancient artifact rod and his merchant mentor kind of guy. That's a side quest. It's entirely optional. You never have to go rescue the merchant.
Oh, okay.
That's just, it's just there, but the game spends way more time, you know, justifying that poorly than it does actually proceeding to the lighthouses and actually, you know, dealing with the antagonists, dealing with rescuing your friends, finding out what things are going on, solving the crisis of the world and all of that. And this all continues, like, into the second game, The Lost Age, where it's basically just, all right, you played the first game, you know what to do, and then you just kind of do it again with even less, like, justification for a bunch of stuff. The dungeons are all terrible. Every single one is a maze with some variant of, In both games.
Yeah, okay.
In both games, with some variant of push column, maybe with or without telekinesis, roll log without telekinesis, because you're not allowed to do that, and maybe some kind of gimmick thing that you accrued along the way. Such gimmick things could be things like punch object as opposed to push object, or lift object as opposed to catch object, which are all of like these other TK powers that you collect along the way, that you collect in the form of orbs that you have to equip to actually make use of the powers. None of like these like world manipulating puzzle element TK powers are ever intrinsically learned by any of the characters. They occupy your character's very finite inventory of 15 spaces each, which all of their equipped equipment and key items do fill the bags of.
Can you swap?
You are left with actually very little inventory space.
Yeah, so the telekinesis stuff is all part of the plot line of the characters that grow up in Telekinesis Town, essentially.
Which turns out to not really be so special, because you've gotten, like, they're called adepts and they use psi energy, yeah. But you've, like every other town you go to has some other kind of form of mysticism, be it, you know, Eastern or Hindu or whatever, and all of them have their own interpretation of magic, and they all do the same thing, and then your characters spend 10 minutes telling them of, oh no, you're just fucking wrong about your ancient traditions, you're actually just adepts, and you use psi energy.
I wonder if that's
appropriating your culture in reverse.
I wonder if that's some, like, if there was some, like, attempt to go with, like, this interesting, like, to try and have, like, an idea or like, a story thread there, but they went absolutely nowhere with it. Because the big thing at the start of the game is they are, you know, yeah, they are like, oh, we gotta keep our telekinesis stuff secret in our secret telekinesis town. Outsiders aren't allowed to learn this sort of thing. And then, obviously, you go outside and everyone's like, check out my illicatesis. And it's like, hold on. Everybody, are we all idiots?
We can already do that. You're not special. oh yeah. By the way, Vale, the telekinesis town in question, is like a 5-minute walk from the next town over.
Yeah, it's not very well.
It's not even particularly secluded.
No, and it does have a fantastic waterfall though that throws you out of the game.
Yeah, speaking of waterfalls and the world map is covered with ridiculous spiral patterns of fjords branching from rivers branching from fjords, and like. It really feels like the only way that this company knows how to railroad you on the world map is with some water and a contrived reason for a bridge not to work.
Well, all of your characters are terrified of water.
Because everyone is deathly afraid of swimming.
That's right. They should be. That they would never mention it, but that would be a perfectly rational response to the intro. We don't have tons and tons of time on this one, but we haven't really talked about the battle system. We talked a little bit about...
Well, thankfully there's not much to talk about the battle system. So the game has you collect djinn, which is actually the plural of genie, and they don't get that correct in this game.
I would.
But it has you go around collecting these things, and you can assign them to a character, and they enhance their power. They give them extra spells, and they give them, you know, better stats and all of that other kind of wahoo. But really, it doesn't really amount to anything of any merit, because they let you cast summons, which, you know, turns them off for a little bit, but they come back on, and they actually, like, boost your scores after doing so. So you can just run around and alpha strike basically everything in the game and not really have to worry about anything. There's, like, so many, like, threats and challenges of this game are invalidated by either the genie system or the fact that just walking restores your psi energy, and you have healers that can magically heal you. So most threats are not threats, and most challenges are not challenges. It's just really...
No, it's a big problem with the game, is that the real challenge of the game is basically getting through the game. And I mean that in, like, very, like, deliberate tedium sense. The the generation for the enemies, you know, the random battles, really constant. This one is, like... Very, like, Dragon
Quest.
Yeah,
this is a pretty oomphy encounter rate, yeah. And none of it's worth spending any time.
No, there's no...
Like, there's other things that I could go on about, but it's basically just all sums down to this is all a tedious slog that, you know, in better hands could be a better game, but it isn't, so it isn't. So I think we should just move on to ranking it, and we should just throw it
I do gotta start, because we didn't mention that this game does have the most ridiculous order battle, which I did want to say, is if you select the same target... if the target dies, your character just gives up and goes into defense, which,
Because apparently the developers had just played Final Fantasy I on the original hardware in recent memory.
It's really annoying, because when you got so many of these battles and your characters are so powerful and the enemies, while cute and adorable, I love quite a few of the enemy designs in this. They got a real nice pep to them. Like the little rat guys with sporks. Oh, they're great. They're so cute. And then you kill them. Everybody dies horribly except the main characters. Like, there's no easy way to get through the combat other than to actually go through it.
I mean, it's just kind of a non-challenge. Even if you're not doing that, you can just hold attack and occasionally throw a supportive spell or two.
Yeah, like, you just gotta heal.
It's not any kind of, you know, stress on resources. There's not any particular strategy or tactic to employ. Like, there's, you know, there's a polar opposite elemental system. It's just like, okay, this is, you know,
yes, you can
less
make
engaging than Pokemon's combat.
Worse, basically. I mean, if you like Golden Sun,
I'm sorry.
Please don't be mad at us. But
if you like Golden Sun, legitimately, go back and play it again and come talk to me.
I don't know. Don't make them do that. They should just remember the fun times they had. Golden Sun is very like a young adult RPG in the sense like you got young adult novels that are not particularly good or particularly well written, but they might get you enthused for reading or whatever.
I guess if the interface and structure don't put you off, then that means you might like a better game in the same genre.
And this one, because it was a Game Boy Advance game, if you got a Game Boy Advance, if you're one of those people that maybe only got a Game Boy Advance because their parents would not like them to use the main TV, you were kind of stuck with this for quite a considerable time. This was...
at least until Generation 3 Pokemon came out.
Yeah, like, that's a thing. So we will rank it. It's not going to go very high, is my guess.
I'm looking in the mid 400 range, because like this isn't like such a travesty that it needs to be checked out, but it's just so tedious, boring, dull. Realistically, the best use for this game is a case study of what not to do.
I don't like to have to play, a 30, 40-hour game? It's really long to, like, case study what's wrong with a bad JRPG. Or middling. But that's also bad, because it's long and dull. I would not want to put it above some of our more interesting middling games. Like, Hakkaiho King of Crusher is probably more interesting.
If it's half as interesting as Xerxes gets excited for it every time
it's
it gets
so
brought
good.
Up.
You get so angry, you destroy a city. Everyone dreams of getting so angry they can just destroy the city. They should remake King of Crusher. I think it would really sell.
That'd probably be pretty good.
I think so. So we don't have too many low-ranking JRPGs, right? Like, we don't really... we got Evergrace, which is not a JRPG, but that's at 459.
Order of the Griffin. That was made on a very Japanese console, but it was made by a Western developer, and that's probably the closest you get. So,
well, it's better than Order of the Griffin because at least you can beat this. Order of the Griffin is no.
Yeah. So I tell you what. I bet this game can't stop Mr. Domino.
Nothing can stop Mr. Domino. It's in the title of Mr. Domino.
I posit that it goes immediately below No One Can Stop Mr. Domino, because this game cannot stop Mr. Domino.
Well, I wouldn't put it above Mr. Domino. Below Mr. Domino, we've got Twisted Metal Small Brawl, which is it's not really a license, but it's a horrible use of the license. If that game is Baby's first Twisted Metal, which is a sentence that you shouldn't have to say, so this is automatically better than that. Like, let's get our kids into Twisted Metal. Like, no. But kids...
Baby's first Sweet Tooth. Yeah, there's a sentence.
But Golden Sun was worth playing exactly when it came out, and that's way better than Small Brawl, but I would play Domino when it came out. So, we gotta close this off. We're gonna do it. It's gonna go at 452, and that's Golden Sun... above Twisted Metal Small Brawl at 453, and below No One Can Stop Mr. Domino. And as I said, I mean, if you really want to replay Golden Sun, I physically can't stop you.
Golden Sun.
What a game!
That's all for this episode. Special thanks goes out to our lovely co-hosts and compatriots, our theme song MC Norm, check him out at Normally Retro on Twitter, and our technical assistant, video editor, and scriptwriter, Ed Burns. You can support this podcast by making a small monthly donation at patreon.com/HG101. I know, I did. By subscribing to the HG101 YouTube channel, and by following at GC9X and at HG_101 on Twitter. You can also hang out with us at our Discord channel. It's at bit.ly/HG Discord. But most importantly, help us spread the love of games by getting on iTunes, subscribing to HG101, and giving us a 5-star review. Do it because you like us and you want us to succeed. Until next time, keep keeping it real.